I'm Tom Cliff, Cobblers fan and proud owner of Track NN and Cafe Track. Track NN is a social enterprise set up in 2018 to support autistic people to access employment through training, support services and creating opportunities. Research showed that just 16% of autistic adults were in full-time employment, and this is something which we are going to change. We opened our cafe on the Market Square in Northampton in January 2019 as a place where individuals could work and develop their employability skills and also be a place where people were free to be themselves. Since opening the cafe in January 2019, we have supported 36 people into paid employment and created over 75 work experience placements and visits for individuals. Since the coronavirus outbreak, we've not been able to open Cafe Track to its full capacity, and we've instead taken our offering online. You can help support us by buying coffee virtually at buymeacoffee.com/cafetrack. Your money goes to helping us to continue to create opportunities for autistic adults to gain employment.
Rain again, and he's got it!
Gavin was closing in. Oh, Gavin has scored!
Abdul Osman against Brad Jones to put Liverpool out of the cup, and Northampton 3! Yeah!
Hello, welcome to It's All Cobblers to Me. My name's Charles. Thanks very much for pressing play, if indeed you just have for the first time, or for the 123rd time. Welcome. Thank you. You join me as I sit in my home office up in the northwest of England, feeling a little bit better today than I did, well, pretty much all last week with all of the rubbish that was going on. Part of me actually doesn't really want to be here to talk about football. I've had a lovely day just watching Doctor Who and playing with my daughter building Lego. It's been lovely. But here to ruin it all for me are both Danny Brothers and Chezzy Jeffy Coleman.
Don't blame us, Charles.
To talk about the Cobblers.
It's not our fault.
You went, oh, we must record. We have to record. Okay, then, fine. Let's do it. So, yes, of course, we are here. It's our weekly fix of, I was going to say cobbler in goodness, but that is a massive over-exaggeration and makes it sound like everything's peachy when it really isn't. but hey, it sounded good in my head to start off with. So, come on then, let's get straight into it, guys. Saturday's defeat at home to Burton. I want to start by simply asking, how did you guys feel like immediately after the final whistle?
Indifferent, I would say, because I was neither expecting it nor not expecting it. Does that make sense? So I think had Keith Curl been in charge, I probably would have been more disappointed. But because it was John Brady and everything's very new and we didn't really know what to expect, I wasn't really expecting us to win it. It would have been great to do so. But on top of that, just so frustrated with simple things. But I think the sad thing is at the moment is that we've become so accustomed to it, it kind of just goes over your head a little bit at this point, doesn't it? I'm not resigned to us being relegated just yet, but I'm kind of like, oh, well, we'll lose this, so it doesn't matter, we'll just carry on with the day. Whereas before you could get that excitement, couldn't you, because you didn't know what was going to happen. But it feels very much like run of the mill that we're going to lose, and we can't seem to get out of that rut, can we? So it is a bit odd. But I mean, there were minor encouraging signs, many, many discouraging signs. But generally speaking, I was indifferent. It didn't shock me.
See, the reason why I asked is because I had a terrible time afterwards with my emotions. I'll be honest. I just thought it was terrible. And I thought, even though that there are some positives, like you said, Chezzy, I just, the result was everything. And to me, it showed an indictment of the players. You know, I'm not laying defeat at the hands of, you know, Brady, Samo, or Rico at all. There, I mean, you know, we found out that they'd actually only had 2 1-hour training sessions with the squad in between Keith being sacked and then the Burton game. So, I mean, you can't. What can you do in 2 hours? There's pretty much nothing. But I was livid, Danny. I was just absolutely livid with how, and obviously we will talk about it, but how poor the first goal was to concede, and then how we then conceded a second one. And I'll be honest with you, that second goal, part of me thinks that that was worse than the first one.
Yeah, I think the second goal was more like we're pushing on and they've caught us on the break. The first goal pissed me off more than most goals this season have because of the stupidity of it. But I think the second goal was more a thing of we're actually going to try and get something out of the game. And like John Brady was saying afterwards, that we're pushing forwards and we got caught in the break. We've got one-on-one against Bryn Morris, who's probably the slowest of our players. And they've exploited that and scored. So I think at the end of the game, I was just deflated, I think, more than anything. I think we'd all got quite up for the game before the game. New era, new stuff, new management team,
yeah.
Potentially new ideas, new formation, players back in. Players playing in the right positions, and it starts off for half an hour, and we're properly going for it, and this is looking like a great new thing, and we've changed our attitudes and stuff. But I think by the end I was just deflated because it was just the same old by the end, and the players just seemed completely and utterly drained of any confidence that they might have had, and that's going to take a huge effort to make up. And there's not that much points difference to make up, but in terms of the mentality and the deflated nature of the whole squad, it just everything seems to be just down at the minute. And that's how I was feeling afterwards, because I'd built it up so much. It was kind of like in similar ways to the Peterborough game earlier in the season, where you think you build it up in your head, and you just, by the end of the day, you're just so deflated because you built it up so much. Similar to the first leg of the playoffs last season. You know, things like that, you just build it and build it and build it, and then when it doesn't change again, it's just so deflating, so disappointing to come out of and lose the game. And there were positives, like Jesse was saying I've got caught up between the two again. Like Jeffy was saying, which we'll come on to, but it the overall feeling was just so down afterwards, and like, where on earth do we go from here, and who's going to come in and do anything different to this?
I mean, let's talk about those positives then. Let's sort of cheer ourselves up a little bit. For me, I mean, instantly when I saw the team sheet, I did think to myself, oh, that looks positive. You know, it looked like we were trying to get a result. And I don't want to keep looking backwards, because I there isn't really much more to be said, or there's certainly nothing more that can be done about what has already happened and gone before. But there were definitely times when the team sheet would be released and you'd look at it and you'd go, he's setting up here for a point. There's no ambition there to try and go and win the game. It's all about just, you start off basically with a point, and then just trying not to lose it. There was no ambition to go and turn it into 3 either. And that was really annoying. So it was a nice, I suppose, refreshing team sheet to see. And it was pretty easy to work out that it was going to be 4-3-3 as well, wasn't it? Because it was, right, okay, you can see that there's definitely 4 defenders. You can see that there's 3 midfielders. And you can see that there's 3 attacking players. So for me, that was really, really good to see to start off with. And then the first, what would we say, 20 minutes? I thought we played really, really well. The problem again, and I sound like a broken record here, you've got to score when you're on top. And the longer we didn't score, the more our confidence just seemed to seep away.
I think as well, that disallowed goal was pivotal, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was so early, though, wasn't it? Yeah. 2 minutes on the clock. I mean, right. Did either of you jump up and down and cheer?
Yeah, I got really excited for about 10 milliseconds and then realised.
I was out with the chickens and then ran back in and it was still 0-0 and I was like, what's going on?
I jumped off my seat and gave a punch of the air and excitement. And then I was like, why is everybody just jogging? What's going on? I was looking at it and I was going, they don't look like they're celebrating anymore. What's happened? And I was just like, okay. And then for it to be called offside, I still can't see an offside. Don't get me wrong. I know that we're not at the perfect camera angle or anything, but I still don't personally see it. But
I think as well, the other thing that I think is going to play on our minds, and I say this very loosely because I'm very against this idea that you need luck. You make your own luck and you know, you work hard for it and it eventually pays off. But sometimes that luck does go against you and you just can't get a break. And for example, they're having that goal disallowed after, 2 minutes? And then Watson hitting, the inside of the post and then coming straight back out again. And it's things like that that on any other day, that offside wouldn't have been given and that goal would have gone in. And then the game completely changes. And I think, aside from the major problems that we've got in a squad and in performance wise, which, you know, is on 90% of it, but a little part of this is the idea that we just need a game with a bit of luck and a game where something falls for us and we catch a break. You know, Hoskins, you know, one of his shots does come off. And we just need that. And I think because we're lacking it, the more you lack it, the more you search for it and it doesn't come. And I think once we've got something like that, I think we'll be able to build. But it just feels like we're so far away from having to be in a position where we get to that point. And it just feels quite desperate at the minute.
What did you make, Danny, of the amount of sort of shoot on site or the shoot on site policy, that, as I'm going to put it? Do you think that was really evident? I asked because my dad sent me a message saying, why do they keep shooting? He was annoyed. And I was like, well, you don't shoot, you don't score, obviously.
But I liked it. I really liked it. I think, like you said, if you don't have a go, you don't get it. And I think the way we've been in the last few weeks plays into that quite a lot because we haven't been scoring, so we might as well try something else and actually everyone have a shot. Like Hoskins was shooting from all over the place. He usually does anyway. Watson is pretty good at that when he finds a bit of space on the edge of the area and gets a pop shot. Hits the bar.
It is good, isn't it? It's that thing of being like, well, you know, you can, don't shoot, don't score. They were getting into decent positions. I loved how far forward Sean McWilliams seemed to be playing.
Yeah, it's the most furthest one at a lot of points when he was bursting forward from the middle as well, which was good.
It was like he was playing as the number 10.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. I mean, the one thing that I will say is that did definitely seem to allow everybody to be further forward. You know, the fact that Sean McWilliams was kind of up right behind the strikers, or striker in Danny Rose, that kind of gave more of a, almost, it made the whole team want to push up.
They overlapped a little bit, didn't they? In a good way, not in a bad way. So the further upfield he was, your wingers could get either side as such. And also as well, this is, again, something that come back to bite us, but we had a little bit more protection. I think we probably would have been caught a little bit more had we have not played with that style, because you're suddenly running back, but we had more cover with the defence in further back as opposed to them, everyone coming forward. And when we played with Keith Curl's style, it was almost like you commit everybody, don't you? And then you just a race back to who can defend quicker. Whereas opposed to on Saturday, I found that overlapping was much more effective and McWilliams was much more effective further up. And also as well, he's got the speed to get back. I think he was on a bit of a tightrope because it was either going to be a game where he was masterful or he was going to get sent off. I think he probably had 50% masterful. And, you know, if he'd have stayed on the pitch any longer, he may well have seen red just because he was so enthusiastic about it. But I like that. I'd rather that than us just get absolutely slaughtered. So I liked what he did. It's such a shame that it seemed to fall apart in the spectacular style it did, because it looked as if we had some kind of shape to us, and had we have got a goal, we probably would have been all right. But the trouble is, how many times have we sat here this season and said that once we score, we have to score again as such, and until we score once, these shackles are not coming off, I don't think.
It's interesting what you're saying afterwards as well, Brady, wasn't it, that some of the players felt shackled still, in terms of like they're not sure when to go and like whether they're allowed to go and like burst down the pitch a little bit. It seemed to definitely shackle the Mills and Kyoso a little bit more. I felt like they were a little bit more subdued than they would usually be playing in a four. But it sounds like he's trying to tell them to go and trust themselves and to have a go. And it definitely felt like there was a lot of occasions where someone could have made a run or could have made like a little effort to get a bit more forward. And there may be still a few hangovers from the last regime, as we'll call it, that they just haven't got the confidence to go and do that.
I think that's it, isn't it? It's all going to come down to confidence. And right now, there isn't any. And it's going to take an awful lot for anybody to get that confidence back into the team and into the players. And the worst thing about it, and this brings us on, I think, nicely to the negatives and the rubbish, as I'm going to put it, is that thing of, well, you know, confidence is already frail, and then you go and have really stupid, really obvious, almost just amateur mistakes. I look, I'm not casting blame on any particular player player. Well, no. I'm not going to get into an argument of whose fault was it. For me, it was, well, both of them.
Absolutely, I agree.
It was schoolboy stuff, wasn't it? Oh. You don't expect to see that on the rec.
It's not. It's ridiculous. It's not schoolboy stuff, Danny. It's not, because that doesn't happen in schoolboy football.
And the other thing is that they're arguing about it as well. Like, how can you argue with that? The only way Bolger can argue about it is the fact that he probably didn't mean to do it because he's trying to clear it. But for him, that's an actual clearance. So maybe it was. Maybe he didn't mean it. But yeah, it was ridiculous, the whole thing.
I just kind of look at it and go, okay, it's technically it's come off his shin.
No. Let's not have any of the technical rubbish. It was rubbish. He couldn't be bothered to clear it properly. Half-heartedly did it, got himself into bother, as did Mitchell. Rubbish. This whole thing about, oh, he's trying to clear it, it's on the top of his shin. Do it properly, then you won't be in this position. It's really, really frustrating. Because
all I'm saying is that it's come off his shin. I don't think he was trying to pass it back to Mitchell. I think he was trying to clear it, but without any conviction.
Absolutely, and that's the issue.
I think it was more like what he was trying to do was hook it clear, whereas what he could have done was just whacked it into bloody Frankie and Benny. Well, Frankie and Benny's is maybe a bit too far for Bolger to reach. But, you know.
The one time he doesn't do a long pass.
Yeah.
It's just, come on, Keaton.
Again, we spoke about this last week, didn't we? It's reading the game. It's, you know, you read the game and you read it well. That's what your defenders do. That's what your centre-backs do. They don't put you under pressure like that. You know, we could sit here and argue all you like about who's responsible. They both are. They both should have known better. And that was just really, really, I'm going to say lazy, actually.
I just think that when it comes to, for Mitchell, he must believe that that is an unintentional back pass. And I remember at the time I couldn't believe that the referee had given it, because I literally just went, that doesn't get given against us, you know. Or, you know, if it had happened at the other end, that doesn't get given. If there were fans in the stadium, that doesn't get given. There was I just don't the amount of times when I have sat at a football match or watched a football match on the telly and I've gone, that's a, and cried back pass, only for it to be not even, you know, bad an eyelid at by anybody else. I just think that's incredible and almost incredibly unlucky that it got given against us. But having said that, it did happen, and you're quite right. one or the other should have just dealt with it. And if in doubt, kick it out. Isn't that the old saying? That
that's all it is. It's simple. It's like, if you've got any little doubt in your mind, just whack it.
Well, clearly though, Mitchell didn't have any doubt.
I don't understand that, because it's, I don't know.
He obviously just felt like it's just come to him, as opposed to it's been passed to him.
Communication so as well, isn't it? It's communication. Talk to your player. If you're going to put him in that position, talk to him. You know, if you're going to say, right, it's coming to you, talk. And this is one thing that we've picked up on Bolger all season, you know, and we do pick him out as an anomaly. And that's okay. We can do that as football fans, talking about his football ability, irrespective of him personally. We can talk about his football ability or lack of it. And it's about communication, and it's about leadership and those qualities that he doesn't seem to have. Now, it's very difficult to say that sat on an armchair. We'd normally be in a stadium and we'd be able to see it. Now, it might be there and we just haven't noticed it because we're not there. But to the armchair fan, which we all are at the moment, annoyingly, from the outside looking in, it does not look like there's a leader or a communicator in that captain. And that, I think, is the main issue.
I think you're being slightly unfair.
That's absolutely fine, but that's my view.
I just mean, in terms of what you're saying, or what I'm hearing you say, Chezzy, is that you think Bolger should tell Mitchell to kick it.
Bolger
should say, this is coming to you, I'm kicking it back to you, you need to clear it.
No, not necessarily in that event isolated, if that makes sense. I'm just talking about, generally speaking, the communication isn't good enough. Like, Bolger should know whereabouts his players are around him. Mitchell should know what's coming. I know that's very difficult, and I sit here in my chair telling them what they should and shouldn't do, and I'm not a footballer, never will be, have two left feet. But I kind of think that if you command your defence better than that, you don't eliminate, because we're all human, things like that are less likely to happen. And I think because, like you said, their confidence is so low that it was almost inevitable on Saturday.
I mean, I just... See, I think that if the Lloyd-Jones goal gets awarded and isn't disallowed, I think our tails go up a bit. We, you know, for the next 20 minutes, we were on top anyway. And I mean, there was some lovely passages of play going on as well, wasn't there, Danny? There was some lovely little 1-2s being played between the midfield and the well, I'm going to call them strikers. I know two out of the three aren't, but you know, it was really nice to watch at points. And yet I never felt comfortable the whole way through it.
Yeah, I don't think our problem is in the general build-up play and stuff. Like, we have got footballers in the squad, and hopefully now they can start to show themselves and start to play a bit more and use their footballing ability in midfield, because they must have been wondering what's going on, because they've got the ball. They're seeing the actual ball on Saturday. So that was a positive. I think it's just the end product. It's getting that ball in the net that's a massive, massive problem, and it has been for a few weeks. And I don't know what it's down to. It just seems to be one of those things where we're just going through a spell of our strikers not being able to do it, or anyone not being able to do it. And it's the age-old adage of just need one to go in off someone's arse or something. And that one at the start, if that goes in, then we probably win the game, because I thought we were in control for the first half hour. We probably grow in more confidence during the game, and we go on to win it. And I think the massive thing about it is that it was Burton. I think any other team above, 18th in the table that we're playing at the weekend, we probably accept that and think, right, we see the positives, we move on. But because it's Burton, they're bottom of the league, there's 3 points against a team that are chasing us and are probably going to catch us up and are right in there with us. That makes it 10 times worse, because the focus on it becomes so much more about the fact it's the bottom team in the league, the fact it's Jimmy coming back, and all that kind of thing. I just don't know where it's coming from at the moment, but the end bit of it.
What about, because the other thing for me, that you mentioned Jimmy and it being Jimmy and it being Burton who were down below us. It was Michael bloody Boswick.
Yeah, of course. You knew as soon as he lined it up. You thought he's going to smash that in.
It was just, I mean, yeah, let's just talk about for one set, for a moment, let's talk about the defending of that indirect free kick.
that's all you could do though, isn't it, really? You just, and it took about five goes for them to actually kick it, because he faked it and then they all pegged it out and he faked it again. They all ran out again.
Do you not think though, that if they just all stood on the line?
That's what I was thinking at the time. I was thinking, why did you stand there? Don't charge out. Just lie down. You know, like people do behind walls now in free kicks. You know, you get that player lying behind a wall now.
I'm glad you clarified that. Yeah. I lie down behind a wall all the time.
I do as well.
More like a wall, I'll lie down behind that. Yeah.
It's the only hiding place. just lie down in a line. Surely that's in the rules, isn't it? And then have a couple of people standing up, a couple of people lying down, stand there, take it in the balls and move on.
Okay, fair enough. Sorry, I can't get over the whole lying down thing. Surely you're leaving the whole of the rest of the goal open.
Well, yeah, just leave a few standing up, a few line. What would it take? Like three players lying down, rest of them standing up, just stand there.
What if, right, you get all 11 players behind the ball, right, but on the line, all of them lying on top of each other? Yeah. Do you reckon that would fill the goal up?
Like doing one of them cheerleader triangle thing, pyramid things.
Yes. And somebody in the back of the North Stand just orchestrating it. Somebody give me a C.
There was people in there, weren't there, in the North Stand as well?
There was. I think it was the ground staff, wasn't it? The people that had helped with the getting the pitch ready.
Shout out to them as well for pouring boiling water on that pitch to try and get it to the point where it was playable. A star for that, because, I mean, our pitch has come under some really unfair criticism. You've got to remember that pitch should have been pulled up in the summer, but couldn't be because of the playoffs. So they have done an incredible job all season. And again, to get that match on, if you look at the fixture list and how many were off, especially geographically as to where Northampton is as well, and if you look at the games around the county, like everything pointed towards that being off, even at 11:30 in the morning. And the fact they got it on is testament to how brilliant they are. So well done.
And massive applause to the kettle as well. I think the kettle should...
Well done, Kettle.
No, not Trevor Kettle.
Not Trevor, yeah.
I was going to say, didn't he?
God, no. Absolutely no. I've just got the match report up because I wanted to double check what the substitutions were, because I saw a couple of fans on Twitter after the game saying that they weren't too impressed with the substitutions, i.e. when they happened or who they were. And before I actually get to that, I noticed that it was Sean Clare who is credited as having the assist for the first goal.
What an assist that is.
there was a point where I thought Sean Clare should have got sent off. Do either of you two know when I'm talking about?
Was he booked originally? He got given a booking,
yellow card, but I'm trying to remember the incident, but I was screaming for a red card for it. He grabbed him round the neck, didn't he? Didn't he grab
McWilliams.
Was it McWilliams? He grabbed around the neck, and then poor old Sam came in because he was like, "Oi, get off my best mate."
Also, as well, I mean, God bless him. He's obviously quite naive as to try and start on McWilliams, because I mean, McWilliams might be young, but he's a fairly strong bloke. He don't take no prisoners, does he? I mean, he was not having
having
it.
Said that, he's no animal. He walked away. I could imagine animal turning around and literally have just like got in the guy's face.
The animal would have put him in row Z immediately, which I'm not condoning. But I mean, animal antics are missed greatly at Sixfields this year.
Yeah. And again, I don't want to, I only bring that up because of the fact that I saw the guy's name and it flashed back. I thought to myself, pretty sure he should have had a red card. I mean, if you go back a couple of weeks ago, that Accrington player that pulled Kyoso's hair has been banned for 4 matches.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So,
did I know that?
I can't remember his name, but he pulled Kyoso's hair and it didn't get noticed at all by the officials or whatever, did it? And so he's been given I was going to call it a posthumous, but that's not right.
It's not Dave.
Or indeed a post hummus. He's not just finished eating some hummus either. I just wonder whether that could be something. I wonder whether that could have retrospective action. But then again, he got given a yellow card. So I'm presuming that the way that football stupidly works is that, oh, he's already been punished.
Yeah, isn't it for some reason if he's given a yellow, you can't give a red retrospective? Oh, it's just, I think.
It's absolutely. Do you know what? A player could get a gun out, shoot somebody, and as long as the referee gave him a yellow card, he'd get away with it. It's a joke. Anyway, going on to the substitutions, there was a bit of criticism given to John Brady by a couple of fans on Twitter that I saw. What did you make of them, Danny? Was there any kind of weirdness in your mind with it?
With the subs?
Yeah.
Harriman for McWilliams was a bit odd, I thought. Even bringing Danny Rose up and bringing Edmondson on, you kind of think, why is he bringing off a striker for a striker when we could throw someone else on, throw Edmondson on for someone else? Like, if he brought Edmondson on for McWilliams, maybe that would make more sense, or for Morris or for Hoskins or Watson kind of thing, just to have a little bit more of an actual forward up there. But it did seem a bit odd to bring Neil on for McWazza.
And so late as well. It was the 82nd minute. I think that was the... I mean, I'll be honest with you. I wasn't sat there going and saying to myself, we need to make a change. Or I wasn't thinking to myself, why hasn't he made a change yet? I don't know why. I think I was just fuming about the fact that we were losing. But I just kind of... Yeah, it was only afterwards, and I sort of went, oh yeah, it was quite late that those subs happened. And why did he not put, the second striker on to go up front alongside? I mean, surely, and again, I'm not a football manager, but surely you just go 4-4-2.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? I think it's difficult because I don't think he wanted to repeat what Curl had done. And I also think that probably in the back of his mind, he wasn't really sure what to do, which is not a problem, by the way. You know, if you, first game in charge, you will have those difficulties. But I think it was the manner in which the first goal went in, I think, rocked everything a little bit and probably didn't help matters. So I think you might look at it differently maybe tomorrow and see what the substitutions are like then, and then maybe be able to gauge what they're like. It's difficult. It's really difficult. And it's really difficult to pass judgment on a bloke that has come in, or three blokes that have come in, just for that one game. It's very hard to rightly or wrongly criticise, because at the end of the day, they've had, 2 hours with these guys? So they're doing the best that they can, and to a certain extent, as are the players on that day. They're not good enough at the minute. We know that. But generally on that day, with that 2-hour training session, and a bit like Brady was saying, that they don't quite know whether to go and trust themselves and go off and move out of position and things and go for it or move upfield. And again, that's something that is difficult to criticise. So I think we're in a bit of a devil's advocate situation, because you could argue all you like about subs, but they didn't happen, did they? He could have put on the most perfect substitutions and they might not have worked, So you just don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So Danny, you wanted to talk about, I think, John Brady's post-match interview and the comments that he made, I think, particularly in regards to the way that the players are speaking to each other.
Yeah, that was pretty eye-opening, wasn't it? The fact that he's come out and said that they're having a go at each other, essentially. Someone misses a shot, someone misses a chance, and they're getting berated by their teammates. It just seems to me like there's a little bit of disharmony there somewhere. And look, from the outside, it looks like that as well. It doesn't seem to be any kind of unity there at all. And for him to come out and say that says to me that that's been there for quite a while. And for him to say that, it's actually quite refreshing. I think all of John Brady's interviews so far, including the one he's just put up today about the Ipswich game, it's been really refreshing, because he's just talked honestly and he's just talked sort of completely out of riddles, which is quite a change from the last 2.5 years. He's told us who's injured. He's told us who's not injured, how long it's going to be. But the main thing is to kind of say what the mood is in the camp is. And I think that was really, really eye-opening and worrying as well for that to come out.
Do you think that maybe part of the reason why there's that openness in regards to what John Brady says is because actually he doesn't necessarily want the job full time?
Not necessarily, I don't think. No, I think he's kind of thinking he's probably on a win, hit or bust situation, so he might as well kind of go for it and just be who he is. Dean Austin definitely felt like that towards the end of his, well, towards the start, sorry, of his reign when he was in caretaker charge. It was a bit like going, oh, I'm just going to just have a go at this. If he's given it as a permanent role, I'm not sure if it would change or not, but he doesn't seem like the type of person who's going to change based on that. He seems quite an open person. I quite like the way he talks. But it's just really, really concerning about what he's saying and how the squad is. He's got a little bit more time with them now to go into Tuesday. We could probably do with the whole week off, honestly, to go through a whole week cycle without a match, but this is how it is. And like I said, the way he's talked about the Ipswich game is actually quite knowledgeable about who they are and how we're just going to go and give it a go. And there's no kind of reserveness about, oh, we'll go there and, you know, this is for the long term. You know, we've got to try and get as many points as we can for the season. It's not all about this game. It's actually saying he's trying to change the mindset a bit and think, you know, let's have a go and let's go for it. Because being there in a pretty vulnerable position themselves in terms of what their expectations are.
Just going back quickly to the point that Brady had made about how shocked he was at the way that the players were talking to each other and essentially the character of the players. Obviously, that was a big thing that Keith Curl often talked about, Chezzy, when it came to signing players and making sure that they had the right character. I mean, do you think in a way this is a sign that everything wasn't good and that Curl had done a bad job this season?
Yes. I don't really want to be too harsh because I really did like Curl. I really respected what he did. However, it didn't work out. And I do think his character of players and his recruitment in particular massively let him down, which is a big factor in why he's gone. The one thing that I think screams out to me as a fan is that it's quite obvious that they aren't good enough for whatever reason. We could sit and analyse whichever reason all day. But I think that because they are struggling so much for form and therefore so much for confidence, that starts to eat away. And I always remember fondly kind of the 2016 season and how gelled that group were through thick and thin. And that was mostly because they were on a real roll. And it's a bit like that age old thing, isn't it? It's that you don't get injured when you're in a title winning season because you just keep going. Adrenaline just keeps you going as such. Whereas when you're on literally the pole opposite of that, it's so difficult to get going and therefore you're unhappy and then it starts to eat away at you and then eats away at your character as such. So the characters that he's brought in may not necessarily have been bad characters, but bad form can cause bad characters. And don't forget, you've got people like Sam Hoskins, who's really experienced and has been through relegation with us and has been through promotion with us. But then you've got others that have come in and all they've ever known at Northampton Town is struggle, because we've always struggled this season. So you've got a mixture of two types of players there, or two types of experiences with the club. And if you're coming into a club and it's just a constant battle that you weren't necessarily prepared for, that's going to be really challenging.
Yeah, I think it is going to be probably the most challenging aspect of, you know, turning our season around, isn't it? I mean, it is, you know, how do you change somebody's mindset? That, especially like you say, it's something that has been bored into them over the past, you know, 6 months, let's say, where it hasn't been going right, it's not going to happen just with a click of the fingers, sorry. It's going to take time. And I think that's one thing that is going to have to be given, isn't it? Regardless of who comes in, or whether it is John Brady, Samo and Rico that stay in charge for a while, time has got to be given. The thing that I'm worried about is that I don't think the fans will give time.
I think they're going to have to. I think we're treading on a balance wire and a tightrope over it, because I think you've got so many different factors that we come around and talk about all the time, but just in general, that the circumstances that surround this season for a start are challenging in themselves. Then the circumstances surrounding the fact that we're 23rd out of 24 teams are challenging on their own. So I think if any normal bog standard Cobblers fan has just got to give it time and give it patience. And I think we cried out for that for Curl, and it obviously didn't work in the end. But I do think the vast majority of those fans were patient for long enough. So it is, we know it's there. We know we can be patient. And I think we have to be, because if we're not, you end up then rushing that process, and it's just never going to be successful. You have to be able to back this. And also as well, you have to put your confidence in these players that have already let you down. And that's a really difficult thing to do as a fan, is to actually wipe the slate clean and let them go and be free without the shackles of that fan judgment that they've got. Because we judge them all the time. And at the moment, we're judging them really negatively because what they're doing is performing really negatively. But if, for example, Brady gets it permanently, or he gets it long term, or someone else comes in, you have to buy into that. A bit like Curl always used to say, you have to buy into that way of thinking and that development that he was crying out for. He did get that to a certain extent, but another manager is going to come in with a new set of ideas that's going to want us to buy into that. Now, we have to do that, because if we don't, we're just going to go on that merry-go-round of managers consistently over and over again, and go up to League One, down to League Two, 7 years later, go up again. And it's just going to be a merry-go-round. We have to buy into this. And part of that is being patient and actually being realistic and pragmatic about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, look, let's move on ever so slightly. I mean, I will say that one of the things that is quite good that we don't record immediately after a game is that on Saturday evening, I was probably ready to sack every single player that is in the squad. And oh God, I was angry. I was so angry with that performance on Saturday and that result. Couldn't. So it's a good job that we're not, and we're recording 2 days later. It's all good. As the podcast comes out on Tuesday, the Cobblers are off down to Ipswich for a little old game. And there's been some shenanigans going on, it would seem, down at Portman Road. Have you seen this?
Bit of a flare action going on. This is a flare up. This is a group that call themselves Blue Action 1878. So, yeah.
Sexy.
Yeah, they've gone down to the Ipswich training ground and thrown a few flares in, because they're pretty unhappy about how things are going. Bless them, up there in 12th.
The dizzy heights. That is ridiculous, isn't it? It really is.
5 points off the playoffs, I think they are. But obviously they've got their knickers in a twist about the playing style and all that.
Great
kind of thing,
phrase, so. By the way.
Got to get that in there. And they're not happy, because they feel like they're a bigger club than mid-table in League One. And it's not going well. So hopefully this plays into our hands a little bit, because, I mean, it definitely would if there was fans in the ground, because it'd be pretty toxic if we were holding them to 0-0 or 1-0 up somehow, if we'd actually managed to score a goal.
Are you joking? Danny, get you out of the clouds.
They would turn pretty quickly, but as it is, it's not quite as simple as that. But it's, I mean, some people are reporting this as a fire, but it's not really. It's just a couple of fans with a couple of flares, and maybe the smoke machine off, stars in their eyes.
But, tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be.
Tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be.
Norwich City.
George Burley.
Oh, great.
Hang on a minute. Ryderson. Pause.
Matt Holland.
Are you impressed that I know who this is?
I'm always impressed that you know who people are.
Are you impressed that I know Stars in Your Eyes?
Didn't they reboot it, though?
Yeah, they rebooted it.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, so I'm not the OG.
Who's the host? Who's the host, Jeffy?
Matthew.
Matthew Kelly. Yeah.
Matthew Kelly.
He was a bit of a legend.
Can we mention him or not? Are we allowed to mention him?
Yeah, he was acquitted, wasn't he? He's all right. Yeah,
I always worry about 90s and 80s celebrities. That.
Oh dear, it's one of those, isn't it? I mean, in 20 years' time, we'll all be talking about Mr. Tumble. We all know it. Anyway, Ipswich Flares. Wow, I mean,
all kicking
incredible.
Off,
incredible. Marcus Stewart.
Yeah, get him in.
He'd probably score a couple of goals for us, looking at the way our strikers are at the minute. Ipswich is a bit of a free hit, isn't it? Danny's already said, hasn't he, Jeffy, about how Brady's just sort of said, let's just go at it and just see what we can do. I think that's the right attitude. And I also think that that's the kind of attitude that we as supporters kind of want to be hearing of, don't we?
Oh yeah, we we've got nothing to lose. We really haven't, because effectively we've completely and utterly messed up the six pointers, in which was our realistic chance of being out of the relegation zone and in the slightly more, it's not even comfortable, but a slightly more advantageous position to some of our lower end of the table counterparts. But you know, we've stuffed that, so there's absolutely no point in dwelling over that. The idea that we go full force and absolutely just go hell for leather in all of these games now and just see what happens. Like, I could not care less, really, realistically, as a fan now. I couldn't care less if we go and lose that 2-1 on the break tomorrow night. I really couldn't, because at the end of the day, if you're giving it a really darn good go, and it just doesn't work, then there's nothing else you can do. Just lob the entire kitchen at it and just see what happens. Lob it all in and just see what happens.
I think we should all turn up in flares, like, as a as a nod to the tonight. Like, all the players just turn up in flares. And playing. I've got a sneaky feeling for this one, by the way.
Oh, Danny, you've said it now.
Yeah. Got one of my sneaky feelings that we're going to get a win here. I feel like the momentum for Ipswich, if we nick that early one, they're gonna feel that pressure of their fans. I know they're not there, but I don't know. Just this little Tuesday night, early-ish kickoff, under the lights. Come on. 2-0.
No, he's gone. He's gone. He's gone with a 2-0 scoreline. I like it. Okay, well, look, I mean, it's still a big week ahead, I think, isn't it? Ipswich on Tuesday, MK on Saturday.
Oh, God, I've just remembered, yeah.
Looking forward to my article coming out on the MK blog.
Oh, dear. We've got a preview show that we'll be covering.
Did we find one, did we?
Well, I've not looked for one, if I'm being honest. If I'm being honest, I don't think we should have.
I think we should just leave it half an hour of a blank.
We didn't have one last time, did we?
No, just put a picture of a roundabout up on Twitter and everyone will understand.
Fabulous. No, we will do a preview show that will come out on Friday. We just might not have an MK fan because...
They're difficult to find. They're probably lost in their roundabout section.
We don't believe that they actually exist. So we'll definitely have one of those. I know that there was. We keep having lots of people come and send us stuff, send us their thoughts, which is lovely. You can send it on Twitter at Cobblers to me or on Facebook, facebook.com/ It's All Cobblers. And it's really, really good when we get stuff. We had one via our Patreon Slack channel, which, by the way, I just want to say a really big hello and thank you to every one of our Patreon supporters. But specifically, if you have started supporting us in the last month or so basically since around about January, then thank you, thank you, thank you so much. And just as I'm actually getting up the information to see the names of these people so I can tell you and say thank you properly to you. So first of all, thank you to Mark Johnson, Malcolm Butler, who has increased his Patreon pledge, which is absolutely lovely. Thank you, Malcolm. Daniel Adams, Tony James, and then a brand new patron from today, no less, Joshua. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Lovely.
Thank you so much for all of your support. I'm sure there's other people here. There is. Here we go. Matthew Crane and Sheffield Cobbler, or Mike, as we know him as in the Slack channel. Thank you all. It really is appreciated. If you want to sign up and support the making of the podcast, then you can go to patreon.com/cobblers2me. You basically get access to the Slack channel community, which is a lovely little safe place, isn't it, Danny? Really, I suppose, is the nice way to put it. And we just talk about cobblers, and especially on a match day, it's really, really lively in there. Really enjoyable. Plus, you get extra bonus content, like extra episodes. And also, depending on what tier you're on, you might also get early access to any interviews that we might be doing in the next couple of weeks.
And so, Charles, next Sunday, of course.
Oh,
let's not forget next Sunday, because patrons, I mean, this is, our patrons going to double when I announce this. My new monthly quiz is coming to Patreon as well. Next Sunday, and patrons can come and join us. I think it's from 7, isn't it, next Sunday?
I think 7 for a 7:15 start on Zoom, just before we normally do our recording of the podcast. So you'll be like the warm-up act, Danny.
Well, yeah, that don't put people off. Come on. That's fully researched quiz as well, by the way.
Absolutely. It's going to be really, really good. I'm really looking forward to it. I can't wait. So if you want to join us, then patreon.com/cobblers2me. Anyway, Malcolm Butler, who is one of our patrons and who has upped his pledge. Thank you again, Malcolm. I will keep saying thank you to all these people because you're all bloody wonderful. Malcolm sent us a message saying, evening all. Well, wasn't that a pile of rubbish this afternoon? I'm guessing that this was sent on Saturday, by the way. I'm not sure whether to resign to League Two here and now or try and kid myself that somehow we'll survive. The fact is that this afternoon we came out all guns blazing, and then after 20 minutes, it was almost as if somebody waved a magic wand and transported us back to the land of consecutive 4-0 defeats. The Brady Bunch have had something like 48 hours at the helm and now know they've got a job on their hands. I won't explain that, but with my glass half full head on, wouldn't it just be typically cobblersy to go and get a result at Portman Road on Tuesday? Anyway, we're all hurting tonight, but the Slack channel came up trumps this afternoon and made me realize why we support Northampton Town. As long as Danny doesn't nip off to crimp a length off on Tuesday, we'll be all right. You'll have to join the Slack to find out what that's all about. Despite my best efforts, my son, Spurs, and grandson, Liverpool, have all had shit weekends. We are not alone. Take care, all. We go again on Tuesday.
Ooh, Rob. Rob's in.
Rob's in. I mean, we've had lots of those kind of messages, and it's really nice. And I've read the whole thing out. Without taking anything out about, you know, plaudits and being nice about the Slack channel and the patrons and stuff, because I think it's lovely and it feeds my ego. And boy, does it need feeding at times. Anyway, before we go, let's have a very, very quick chat about the latest manager rumours. I don't know what I was saying there. Jeffy, I've got a list here. It's not a very long one. Have you got anyone in mind for the currently vacant Cobblers manager position?
Yes.
Oh, pray tell.
Alan McCormack.
Oh, I knew it.
No,
has he done his badges?
Seriously, he's doing them. Seriously, though,
get him in.
I would say top of my list at the minute is the Cowley brothers, or creeping up to the very top, I would say, is the Sutton manager at the minute.
Matt Gray.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like he'd creep up on anything.
No, he doesn't. If he did, I'd be very worried.
Can I tell you why I feel that he's creeping up to the top of my list?
Is it because he looks like Alan McCormack?
No, never consider that, but yes, good point. No, do you know why? Because I see stark similarities between his journey through football management as I did with Chris Wilder. Ooh, and I think it's a really good sign.
High praise.
I mean, you've literally just jinxed it.
I mean, obviously, yes, of course I have. But do you know what I mean? It, like, we sit and we analyse managers, past, present, blah, 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 blah. But generally speaking, with taking Chris Wilder out of the equation, the general way always, not just with this board, but with other boards, generally speaking, we've always gone for managers that know the leagues. Is it not time to go for a gamble and go for a manager that's up and coming, young, and doesn't really know the league particularly well, but is really successful at just doing the very basics? And if you can run a non-league club during a pandemic, I think you can probably do many a thing.
Did you see that? Did you see that interview he did after the
yes,
game at the
I
weekend?
Did.
Yeah, that little twinkle, didn't he? Little twinkle in his eyes when he got asked about it. It's like, here we go. And the only thing probably stopping him is that the fact we may well be in the same league next year, next season. But if you're looking at it from his point of view, you think, yeah, this is pretty good opportunity and a pretty good chance that we're not dead and buried yet. Like, I think it was Jake Chart was saying on Saturday, we're, like, points wise, we're nowhere near, but it just needs someone to come in and just round everyone up, and maybe a fresh face like that would work. And if he's doing bloody well with Sutton, to be fair to him.
Mm, he is.
It's not an easy place either, Sutton.
I don't know. I don't
no,
know
it's
been.
Really not an e- it's not an easy place to go to and win.
I see.
Looking at the other teams around Sutton, it's a difficult place to go, which is what you want. You want a fortress.
They've got a 3G pitch, haven't they?
Mm.
Oh, yeah, plastic pitch or something. But I think when people say that of them, it takes away a little bit of what a job he actually does. I think that kind of devalues what he has actually done, which has been, you still have to go and win the game, don't you?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. That is it, isn't it? Other managers being mentioned, Kevin Wilkin, of course.
Oh, I thought you were going Keegan, Charles. I was off my seat.
Somebody mentioned Ian Culverhouse the other day on the Slack, didn't they? That was it.
Yeah, because he's King's Lynn manager, isn't he?
He is, he's, yeah. I'd take that. Well. I'd absolutely take that. I can't believe it. Right, so there's a list, right? I've got in front of me a Word document with a list that Danny has come up with. Top of that list is Matt Gray, Sutton United manager. Then we've got Kevin Wilkin. We've got the Cowley brothers have already been mentioned. I think that's probably very unrealistic. And then for some reason, I don't know why I go from unrealistic Danny Cowley to this. I really don't understand. But literally, Danny has written the next manager on the list, Arsene Wenger.
Get him in. I said that on our live show the other day. I thought he ticks all the boxes, doesn't he? Long-term plan, you know, plays the right way. Get him in. Likes a challenge.
Plot twist.
Oh,
breaking news.
Yeah, plot twist. What if, I'm just putting this out here, what if Wilder was to leave Sheffield United?
If we can't afford the Cowleys, we're not going to be able to afford
Yeah, but Chris I don't Wilder. Think Chris Wilder would care. He's so low maintenance, isn't he?
He would.
He's on an upward trajectory and all of that sort of stuff.
I'm
he's on
just
a wave.
Putting it out there.
He would get most mid-table Prem jobs, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. I'm not diminishing the job that he's done. I'm just in dreamland. It's okay.
Maybe Alan. Certainly. Get Alan in.
McCormack or Neil?
Neil.
No, Nilly. Get Neil in on his own.
Nilly on his own.
Just a load of free kicks. Majestically worked free kicks. Win us the games. Keep us up.
That'd be fabulous, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it just be amazing? That'd be lovely. Well, look, that's it. That's all we've got time for this week. As I said before, myself and Danny will come back with a preview show, which will be out on Friday. Thank you very much for listening today. If you've listened lots of times before, or even if you've just joined in now, why not go and give us a lovely 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, whatever it is you want to call it. Leave us something and just tell us that you've enjoyed the pod. That'd be absolutely lovely. There's loads of ways to support us by doing that, and listening to the podcast is basically the easiest way you can. And if you want to go out there and do a little bit more, then you can go to patreon.com/cobblers to me. Make sure you hit the subscribe button on whatever it is that you listen to us on, whether it's Apple or Spotify or any of the other apps that are available for you to listen to the podcast. That way, you'll never miss an episode when it gets released. It will go straight onto your phone or your tablet or wherever it is that you listen to us on. And we will be back on Friday, as I said. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Way! There's the cup. There's the pictures you'll see on tomorrow's back pages. The Cobblers are going through into Division 1. Bring them on, because we deserve it.
I did not see it.
I'm Tom Cliff, creator of the world-famous online stand-up bingo, which started out its life at Northampton Town Football Club. Join me every Saturday at 2:15 p.m. on the Cafe Track Facebook page for your chance to be crowned stand-up bingo champion of the world. Every ticket purchased goes towards keeping Cafe Track and Track NN a social enterprise dedicated to helping people to access work experience and hopefully employment. Buy your ticket now at buymeacoffee.com/Cafe Track. Make sure you leave your chosen 15 numbers between 1 and 90 in the comment section, and then play along live on the Saturday afternoons before the Cobblers game. So go to buymeacoffee.com/cafetrack now and get your ticket for the world famous stand-up bingo.